Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. We're going to kick off the season here. We don't yet have a quorum, so we won't officially call the meeting to order. We'll do that as soon as the members are here for a quorum. We do have new pages. If the pages could introduce yourselves. Who are you and where are you from? Just yell it out. You're all right.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Laura Lee Rudia, and I'm from Rogers. I have a master's in counseling and psychological services and marriage and family therapy. And I'm happy to be here.
Welcome to the committee. Welcome to the committee. All right. And we also have a new GOP researcher, Bethany Dorabiella. And we welcome her to the committee. And are ready to go for the 2016 regular session here. We were in a few weeks ago for an interim session where we had the legislative auditor come in and went through some of the issues with Minsure and some of our public program, particularly around public program integrity. And it's sort of within that context that we wanted to start out again here, because those the OLA report raised a lot of, I think, good questions about governance and structure at Minsure and where we're going forward for eligibility verification, for system integrity, and for budget. And one of the issues that we have is that it's a complicated connection between DHS, Minsure, MNIT, and where are the lines of accountability within that. So what we wanted to try to do is to try to go through that a little bit, go through some of the issues that were brought up in the OLA report, and also some of the questions that were brought to bear. We asked for and received a lot of information from the departments trying to get at some of that, but we also have some issues that are outstanding, and just where are we going with Minsure and our public programs into 2016 and beyond within the bill that we currently have and going into next year and dealing with the issues of our constituents and the best interests of the state of Minnesota. And I'm a picture guy. I like to have pictures. So I wanted to try to get the relationship between Minsure and DHS and MNIT, and so I had a Venn diagram drawn for myself so I can kind of get a handle on this. And it doesn't take you very long to figure out why you need a diagram with a lot of the governance structures and some of the things that we have in place. And a lot of the problems that we're having, I think, are endemic of that structure, and folks falling between the cracks. So we have requested and received quite a bit of information, and I want to thank the commissioners for being here and also for providing the information that has been requested. And also the commissioners have requested some time to kind of open things up, which we are happy to do and accommodate. So at this time, I would like you to introduce yourself in whatever order you would like. I think you asked for about 15 minutes just to kind of frame up some of the issues that we had to kick off the 2016 session. So take it away in whatever order.
Thank you, Chair Dean and members. I'm Emily Piper, Commissioner of Human Services, and I think I'll just start off with a couple brief remarks. First of all, thank you for convening this meeting and for the opportunity. I appreciate it to be here with you today to speak to this issue. I know that I speak for the department and the Dayton administration to when I say that we want to be as transparent as possible. State agencies are tasked with fulfilling their statutory responsibilities with appropriations and do have authority within parameters to on how to use those funds and how those funds are spent. As you reference, Chair Dean, the relationships between DHS, Minsure, and MNIT are complicated, and they're governed by Minnesota law. In particular, IT consolidation, the statute passed in, the law passed in 2011 that consolidated IT under MNIT. DHS and Minsure both rely on MNIT for our IT services. We also rely on the 2013 law that created MNsure, anticipating that MNsure would be funded through a combination of a premium withhold revenue source, as well as DHS cost allocations for functions that benefit public program recipients. At the Department of Human Services, we continue to work to improve our systems and our programs and appreciate the critical and continued partnership between our agency, MNITT, MNsure, the legislature, the MNsure board, and our executive steering committee. This partnership that we have makes this work possible. We just recently learned that the state's uninsurance rate has reached a historic low of 4%, and the majority of those individuals and families are eligible for our public programs. Over the past 3 years, MNsure, DHS, and MNitT have worked together to develop the shared eligibility system that now serves hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans. And since that time, the IT system has continued in development with significant investments in its functionality, including reporting, renewals, change in circumstances, and others. We know that this work is not done. We have an IT roadmap for further improvements this year. We also understand that we face a challenge going forward to provide a fully functioning system for our consumers, the counties, and state workers that all need it. We're working with MNitT and MNsure to identify and budget needed resources for fiscal year 18 and beyond. The interagency agreement that you all have between DHS and MNsure defines these resources that we share and the services that we purchase from one another. DHS has a responsibility to share in these systems costs given that the majority of enrollees are in public programs. DHS and MNsure have established a cost allocation methodology that defines specific cost centers and metrics to allocate costs between these agencies. This cost allocation is the way that we share costs that are benefiting both public and private program enrollees. This plan for cost allocation is submitted to the federal government. It's important to ensure that we are appropriately and collaboratively sharing resources as we work to build our FY18 and beyond budget and establish priorities. The cost allocation that we currently use is based on the best information we had for our 2015 DHS legislative request that was developed in 2014. As we gain more experience, we need to continuously review all the allocations and adjust to the current reality and new metrics. DHS and MNsure are engaged in that review now. I want you to know that I share your concerns that each of our agencies stay true to our commitment and to our partnership. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions and have my Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson and others here for more technical questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner O'Toole, would you like to say something as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, and I appreciate it. We will... I am Allison O'Toole. I'm the CEO of MNsure, and I know you have a lot of questions today and want to be respectful of your time and really endorse what Commissioner Piper just said, but I'd like to touch on a few other matters. As most of you know, we recently completed our third open enrollment period, and the results were very encouraging. MNsure enrolled more than 85,000 Minnesotans in private health insurance coverage and had the largest percentage of new enrollment in the country. We also assisted the Department of Human Services in enrolling more than 100,000 new Minnesotans in public health care programs. This enrollment work is starting to have a real impact across our state, and earlier this month, the Minnesota Department of Health released its findings from their biennial State Health Access Survey, and the results were significant. As Commissioner Piper said, 96% of Minnesotans now have health insurance coverage, and Minnesota's uninsured rate is the lowest it's been in state history. Between 2013 and 2015, more than 200,000 previously uninsured Minnesotans obtained coverage, many of whom were uninsured for a year or more. This slashed the state's uninsured rate nearly in half, and that's real progress for Minnesota. Even though our open enrollment is over, our work does not stop. And most notably, our board of directors is working on budget planning, as Commissioner Piper mentioned, for the upcoming fiscal years. And we're working with our partners at Minute to reduce and mail IRS Form 1095A to Minnesotans who enrolled in qualified health plans for MinSure. I'll address both of those topics very briefly for you. First on 1095s, we continue to work feverishly to produce, process, and mail IRS Form 1095A to Minnesotans who enrolled in private health insurance plans through MinSure. To remind committee members, Form 1095A is required by the IRS for marketplace enrollees to properly file their federal tax return. To date, we have mailed 63% of the 1095A forms. It's important to note that a majority of Minnesotans have these in their hands and can file their taxes. But believe me when I say that no one is as disappointed as I am that 100% are not in the mail. This is a situation that should have been resolved 2 months ago and lingers today. And frankly, if I were a Minnesotan waiting for this form to come in the mail, I would be frustrated. MinSure has been open and transparent about this process from the beginning, and we will continue that practice. I'm expecting updated information on 1095A forms this afternoon and on our path forward. We will continue to share that information with you and the public as it is available. Regarding our budget, the MinSure Board of Directors recently heard an update on our current fiscal year budget, as well as approved a preliminary fiscal year 2017 budget and a preliminary three-year budget plan, which is sustainable and shows a full 18 months without federal grant funding. Our current fiscal budget remains stable, balanced, thoughtful, and conservative. We are ahead on projected effectuated numbers. We are exceeding our projected revenue. We have also been conscious stewards of our finances and have underspent in many business areas. We will end this fiscal year balanced with a carry forward of funds. Looking ahead to fiscal year 2017, we expect to see continued budget stability due to our enrollment growth and continued fiscal conservatism. A preliminary FY17 budget was approved by the MinSure Board of Directors last week. It will be submitted to the legislature today, and will be officially adopted by the board later this summer. In the first 6 months of FY17, MinSure maintains three sources of revenue: premium withhold, SSIO establishment grants, and DHS cost allocation. Given the underspending by many MinSure business areas this year, spending adjustments made in FY17 are modest and well within the range to maintain current levels of operation. Our FY18 budget plan is just that, it is a plan. FY18 will be the first full budget in which MinSure will not receive federal grant funding. And if enrollment continues to grow as we have projected, we will maintain a stable, balanced, and sustainable budget. Of course, all of this work would not take place without the partnership and structure that Commissioner Piper mentioned, with DHS and Minute, and most notably our Executive Steering Committee. This committee is working and is a way to bring stakeholder input to the table as we make decisions regarding the direction of IT development. I'm sure you will have detailed questions about the topics I've just mentioned, as well as others. I welcome those questions from members and will answer them to the best of my ability. I also have COO Katie Burns here with me to assist. And finally, as I've said numerous times, as MinSure's CEO, my eyes are focused on improving the customer experience, managing and implementing a smart, balanced budget, and making sure as many people as possible take advantage of the products MinSure has to offer. I want to thank our partners all across the state for their work in helping us achieve our goals. And I also want to thank our champions and our critics, many of whom are on this committee. MinSure has improved over the last few years because we hold ourselves accountable, and so do you. We've made progress, and I'm eager to continue our path of improvement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Toole. Minute, you want to weigh in for a minute?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Peterson. I'm the Chief Information Officer for both DHS and MNSHR. I wanted to start with a status of many of the past items we've discussed in this committee and progress on the roadmap that has been presented previously. We had the discussion around the move of the premiums or the financials solution from the existing MNSHR solution back to MMIS. That work was completed last weekend. The first invoices will be generated from the new solution on 3/17, so as soon as this Thursday. We're confident this migration puts us in a better position going forward and allows for a 45-day billing cycle as well as coverage contingent on payment. We're also on track with the spring release. Deployment is currently scheduled for April 2nd, and testing is underway right now. This release includes additional functionality of core county pain points around notices, automating referrals for child support, refined case transfer capabilities for the caseworkers, as well as the continued MMIS interface or the Medicaid claims payment solution improvements to the interface itself. We've also been responding to the counties in terms of off-cycle releases. You may have heard concerns expressed by the counties related to the renewals and delays in the issues of processing renewals. In early January and late February, we took those concerns seriously and implemented changes around the renewals process itself to remove some of the errors that were being generated, as well as enhance the MMIS interface to allow processing to be more effective. We recognize additional work and improvements will be needed, and those are slated for continuation throughout this year. The summer release activity has already begun as well. The largest item in this release is the periodic data match. We currently are in process with DHS defining requirements. As with any release, there will be continuous evaluation against the business vision of integrated eligibility and ensuring a consistent single approach for all counties, as opposed to multiple one-off approaches that would contribute to both system complexity and complexities in the county navigation. The periodic data matching process is essentially a mid-year renewal and thus relies heavily on the system's renewal functionality. Accordingly, we are working closely with the eligibility renewal functionality vendor, IDM, to implement periodic data matching in the summer release. Want to comment on 1095s as well. We continue to work closely with MNSHR on the generation of the 1095As. It's important to recognize that the carrier integration work that remained unfinished last year, that we were transparent about the red item that we discussed in this committee as well around the lack of delivery of that item, is a contributing factor of the challenges we have faced in resolving the discrepancies in the data between carrier systems and the MET system. We are now seeing the downstream effects of the carrier integration work not being completed as scheduled. That process with carrier partners should have started earlier last year, but because that did not get completed, reconciliation of carrier and MET's data still needs to happen in 2016. We're working with MNSHR as quickly as we can to process and mail the remaining 1098-5A forms as they get updated. We continue to follow the governance structure that was in place throughout 2015, which allows stakeholder input mechanisms for our business partners to continue to prioritize day-to-day and longer-term projects. Within that structure, MNSHR performs analysis, provides estimates on the level of effort and resources required to achieve priorities, and facilitates the conversations to come to an agreement on the roadmap direction. Once priorities are set, then it manages the progress against task orders and track and monitor the delivery of the releases. As always, I'm happy to answer any questions the members have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I'd like to officially call the meeting to order. We do now have a quorum. And I just want to kind of begin a little bit with where we've been over the interim. And in our travels around the state, we've had constituents with all of our members. All 134 members have been hearing from people trying to navigate through MNSHR, whether they're on public programs or they're on private health insurance, trying to buy insurance for their families, trying to navigate through that and deal with the systems and the many problems that have been in the newspaper and on television. And that's not really why we're here today. one of the things that we have really focused on is functionality and payment of how this thing is going to be paid for moving forward. And it has always been a specific concern of mine about financing for MNsure and governance structure within it, because that's been, from my experience, a design error from the structure of MNsure and for the oversight. There not being direct oversight of the finances from the legislature, but that's separated, and how that really works and what that relationship is a problem, together with the functionality of the system that we have experienced through our constituents' experiences all across the state. A few years ago, I was sitting over there, and the first executive director was sitting up there, and I asked the question about how much money it would take to run MNsure, and if we would have to go from a 1.5% withhold to a higher withhold in order to keep the doors open with the numbers that they currently had. And I was assured at that time that even though the authority was being asked for to go up to 3.5%, that would never happen, even if the numbers were less than expected. And I believe that's a direct quote. That, of course, didn't happen. That the numbers have not worked out the way they should have, and the money is not coming in from the premiums, and this by and large is a public program, over 90% from enrollment, and that's just the facts. That's how it's worked out. I am not equally concerned today. I am much more concerned about the future viability of MNsure when I look at the budget that I have laid out, because the federal government, through its grants, has stood up the system and got the money going with $370 million of grants that has created a system that is yet not functional. That grant money is now drying up. And we see that going from this year, this fiscal year, to next fiscal year, we see that dropping about 80% in the spending out of the grant money. So that's very concerning to somebody who says, well, how are we going to pay for this if we have not enough customers to pay for the overhead, and on top of that, we have less federal money coming in? Where's that money going to be coming from? And as we look ahead, we see that the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota are going to be paying, and that is, I think, something that we need to be transparent about. If the taxpayers are, in fact, going to be paying for this, they need to know how much they're going to pay and where they are, what they're getting for the money. As I look at the budget moving forward, I see that if you go to these white books, if you go to tab 5, and you go into page 14 labeled, we see dollars that are actually, I don't have the right number. It's if you go back to the within that tab, the second page 14, as you go through within tab 5. You guys really did provide a lot of documentation. Thank you. The implementation advanced planning document for DHS. And so issue number one is, how are we going to be paying the bills at MNsure, and how are we, who's going to be paying for that? What are the taxpayers going to be getting for that? How are you going to keep the doors open? But within that, we see that our state has to provide a state share for the federal government. As you know, we draw down federal funds, we have to match those at different levels depending on whether it's for a service or for a grant. And we see the cost allocation methodology, we have $28.4 million of total state share. And that is a number that was decided by MNsure, totally outside of the state legislature's purview. We couldn't say no to that. We couldn't say yes to that. That happens over here at Minshure. And we have no ability to say that that's not enough money or that's too much money. That's $28 million state tax dollars that are being spent that we don't have any control over. And I'd like to know when I voted for that and when any one of the members of the committee voted for that and how Minshure justifies that from a fiscal standpoint with taxpayer dollars.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, could you just tell us where you are, where the document is that you're referring to?
It's did you get a big white binder?
Yeah.
All right, you go to tab 5. I'm sorry, if you go in to the second page 14, and I read the front cover page, which is this document right here, Tina. The implementation advanced planning document.
Sorry. Mr. Chair, it's about 5 in from back of the tab.
Yep. Go to 6 and work backwards.
Mr. Chair, is that section 11 cost? Is that where you're reading that table?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank
All
you.
Right. We got it. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Chuck Johnson, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Human Services. To your question about where the dollars come from, if you turn to tab 4, the first page that's at tab 4 shows the appropriations that have been made to the Department of Human Services for the purposes of supporting the METS eligibility system and Minshure business operations. As well as some of the enrollment grants that are provided for medical assistance and Minnesota Care. There were appropriations made in 2013 as part of the creation of Minshure to DHS to support our share of those costs under the cost allocation scheme for medical assistance in Minnesota Care. There was appropriation made in 2015 in addition, which essentially was to appropriate additional money to DHS because, as you referenced earlier, the caseload split that's used as the metric for much of the cost allocation came in much more toward the public program side than toward the private program side, as had been anticipated in the 2013 fiscal note. So this shows the appropriations that back up the Minshure, the Minshure pieces of our responsibility for funding Minshure, both for the system and for Minshure business operations. In addition, the page 14 you were looking at in the advanced planning document also includes some funds for DHS system modernization that are, in a sense, apart from the Minshure METS piece, which accounts for another portion of that $28 million.
And Mr. Johnson, if you could just tell us, you know, we say that the structure, the future is bright. Everything is great. The numbers are great. The budget works. I can tell you just from dealing with people trying to navigate the system and the folks who work at the counties who are working directly with families trying to put together programs, they would have a different view of the current trajectory of where things are heading. And when you say that the budget is balanced moving forward, if we said that your costs are $10 and we have 94% public programming, we can budget. We can then just bill DHS 94% of X. We don't then come back to the legislature and say that this is an appropriation that we can give you. So in fact, what I think that we've done is abdicated our responsibility as a legislature by saying that if one agency doesn't get the budget they like, a governor down the road could just say, well, let's have one agency bill another agency and trade invoices and checks, and somehow that will be an appropriation that's acceptable. I would consider that a rewriting of our state budget that is inappropriate, and that's one that the legislature should have oversight of. I can't understand that, and no one in this committee voted for those appropriations or transfers, but through these interagency agreements are just trading money from one agency to another in a fashion that you can do if you have a healthcare access fund with a 2% provider tax that feeds that. I think that that's inappropriate from what we should be doing. If the agency needs the money from the legislature, the governor and the agency should come to the legislature with a direct appropriation that we can decide is too much or is too little or is inappropriate or is appropriate. But this interagency agreement is, in my terms, inappropriate from our standpoint that we're not doing our jobs. The governor asked for an appropriation, kind of a sketch of an appropriation, and we were not able to agree on that. But that shouldn't mean that that's a blank checkbook to the Healthcare Access Fund or our general fund, in fact, for ongoing expenses. So that's my comment. I don't know if you have a reaction to that. In particular, that we have great concerns over the sustainability, because many of these members around this committee were here when we heard the projections from MNsure would not be, 30% more than actual, not 40% more than actual, but several hundred percent more than what actually came to pass. So we are very concerned about approving additional appropriations for that for those good reasons. What do you think about the relationship between the legislature, the governor, and MNsure in terms of ongoing appropriations? Do you think that's appropriate, or do you think it's needs work?
Mr. Chair, there are certainly multiple ways that the financing of MNsure could have been set up. The way it was set up in 2013, and the way it was fiscal noted, and the way the appropriations were made, was that a portion of the cost would be picked up by DHS, representing the extent to which MNsure, either on the IT side or on the business operations side, is doing work that is benefiting public program enrollees. Those are costs that we can bear. That is the way it was set up. That's the way it's been maintained. Those appropriations, I'm not sure, I don't know how everybody votes, but they were voted on and passed by the legislature. We have no ability to spend money that's not appropriated to us from the Healthcare Access Fund or any other fund. It has to be appropriated for us to spend it. As far as the governor's question, I mean, you raise a fair question about that tension between what MNsure wants to spend in their budget and how that comes back to DHS in terms of what we're obligated to pay. As Commissioner Piper said in her opening comments, one of the matters we have taken up with MNsure, and we're working with them on cooperatively, is looking at the cost allocation issues going forward. We do think that's an important question to make sure that we're doing our due diligence to ensure that the dollars that are appropriated for public program enrollees are going to benefit public program enrollees. I'd also say in terms of sustainability that we agree that there's a concern there from the IT side. As you're aware, we were given a grant by the federal government with the addition of some appropriations to DHS. We've been working on a big development effort over the last year, and we're going to continue that through this remaining of the calendar year in 2016. We are working right now in the Executive Steering Committee across the agencies with MNIT to identify what resources we need going forward, and to identify what the implications are for the MNsure budget and for the DHS budget in order to ensure that we have an adequate IT budget starting in fiscal year 18 to make the system improvements that we need to continue to make the system work better for all the folks that are using it.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And I'd just like to point out to members that there is no, in fact, cap or appropriation, that, in fact, that these interagency agreements can be used as an overdraft account, that they can spend. There is no, absolutely positively in statute, no cap on the amount of money that can be drawn, I would assume, other than the amount of money left in the funds. So that is being done without your vote. And with that, I'll go to Representative Murphy.
I'll pass this for a moment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, I think that a couple things keep getting conflated here. I mean, you keep talking, you're talking about multiple issues and then not letting them respond to the various issues as you're raising them. I want to go back to the issue about whether there is money being inappropriately spent. And I think I'm hearing from the chair kind of an amorphous allegation that somehow Minsher or DHS or both are dipping into money in the healthcare access fund that isn't appropriated, that they're taking money that the legislature has not approved. And I think we heard Mr. Johnson say that the money has to be appropriated for us to spend it. So I want us to be very clear about what we're talking about here. Mr. Johnson can of course, correct me if I'm wrong, but there is no money that is being spent by these agencies that has not been appropriated. Now, the nature of the way this thing is working, because it is a complex interaction between different agencies, there has to be some ability to make sure that the share that should be the responsibility of one or the responsibility of the other is paid for by that entity. And that is what these interagency agreements are doing. But the agencies are spending money that has been appropriated for that purpose. Specifically, you have alleged that they are spending money out of the Healthcare Access Fund as though they just are doing it, using that as some kind of slush fund. And that is absolutely false. There was money appropriated in the conference report that you voted for, Mr. Chair, that all the members of the conference committee voted for, and that I think all of the GOP members in the House voted for. It appropriated money to DHS to be used for the purpose of doing its share of this enterprise. And I think that it's very inappropriate for you to keep suggesting that they are somehow dipping into a fund without legislative authority. That is simply false. And I would like Mr. Johnson and maybe the other two testifiers, if they care to comment. Is what I'm saying true, or is there some, I think you already did say it, but I just want this to be very, very clear, because there is an allegation here which I think is extremely unfair, and a suggestion that's being made, and we need to really nip that in the bud. Okay. And so would you please respond to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I think you stated well that the appropriations that we're using from DHS to support Minsure, to support the Mets IT system, are the dollars that were appropriated by the legislature to us for that purpose. Some general fund, some healthcare access fund. We also have the ability within our administrative accounts to move money around. So we do have the ability within our administrative accounts to move some money over to different purposes. We have not done that for the purposes of doing anything related to Minsure. We are working within the appropriations that we were given. We've communicated to Minsure that that's the boundary we want to stay within going into the future as well.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, if you have a specific evidence that there's some wrongdoing in this respect, I think it would be incumbent upon you to show where that is happening. Because we can show you very clearly in the spreadsheet where the money is from the Healthcare Access Fund that DHS is using for this purpose. And if you have evidence that they are somehow dipping into the fund that isn't being appropriated, I wish that you would come forward. Otherwise, I think that this needs to be put to rest. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And I would just like to say that it was of great concern to me and to many other members of the committee that as the federal government stepped away from Minsure with its grants, and that we were told off, you get one more year and then we're going to cut you off. All right, this is it. This is the last year. We were waiting for it, and I saw it in the appropriations, and originally came up as DHS resources for Minsure development and operations. That was the first request. That was not included in the House. It was included in the governor's request. Then that same amount was changed to DHS county resources for technology development and operations. That was requested for and did not was not appropriated, all in the same amount. And then we have another request, DHS and County Technology. So we have this thing that gets called three different times every time it comes back in a different line item with a different name. I just want to say, if we want to pay for this, let's say what it is, let's say where the money's going, and let's be clear with people about it, that that's what it is. And these, if we call it something else, and then we say, well, we're going to turn around and look the other way, and you can help yourself to this money, I don't think that's very appropriate. I think that if the legislature wants to appropriate money for a specific task, that we decide to do it or not do it, and be honest with people about it. And that's what I was looking for within this, and that's what I thought we were getting. Now, I think that the interagency agreements between the agencies have been set up in such a way to skate around the obligation that we have to appropriate and oversee funds. I think that the legislature should not have given up that much authority over to the agencies, to this governor or a future governor, whether that's Governor Liebling or if it's Governor Mack or whoever, Governor Stolarczyk, that those governors not be able to rewrite their budgets through interagency agreements. And so that was something that I wanted to be very clear about, and I think it's something that we need to be crystal clear about with an agency particularly as controversial as MNsure about what the Minnesota taxpayers are actually paying for and what they're getting for this. And I think that we need to be very, very clear about that. And I think that the people really deserve that. If this thing is going to cost twice as much money next year and half the number of people that are going to sign up, we need to know that right now. We need to know that that has real effects, because it has real effects in your district and real effects in my district from people who want services and can't get them because there aren't resources available. And that's, I think, our obligation. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with you on the transparency part of this. And what happened in the conference committee is that you all voted for different versions of the conference report that had these different ways of describing this money. And my understanding is the reason that it kept changing name was because the folks on your conference committee didn't want to vote for it if it said anything to do with MNsure. So, you know, I think to the degree that this isn't transparent, it's because you all have your directive from on high, you know, Republicans must not support MNsure. But I think that if you want to be absolutely transparent, which I think we all should be transparent, I agree with you there, then maybe we should just, next time you have a conference committee, if you are so fortunate to have one, that you should just allow it to be keep the name that it really has, and then we wouldn't have this problem, because that is, I believe, the reason that the names kept changing, because the Republican members knew it had to be funded and wouldn't vote for it unless the name was changed.
Well, Representative Liebling, I think that that is inaccurate and it is completely false. The fact of the matter is that if we were going to do that, we should probably have some language in the bill that says to the agencies and the commissioners, this is how we would like you to spend this money. If there is the health care access fund is held and is just available for appropriation, as we've seen in today's news, the governor's budget is using the health care access fund yet again to fund more priorities so that you can spend more money outside of the healthcare access fund for other stuff, that's a problem. And that 2% provider tax that feeds the healthcare access fund is going away. That is current law in 2019. And so we need to start budgeting with that in mind and stop using this inappropriately. So I've always been very, very clear about that, and I hope to be very clear in the future about how we're going to be doing that. But we need to be accountable about how MNsure is setting up its budget and how they're accounting for it, because the downstream effects of that are not political for people. They are real life for people who aren't able to get services. They're getting kicked off of services because it's not working. And we've got a budget that foresees no additional IT money. Now, that's very concerning for folks in my district, and it should be for folks in your district as well. Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I learn something at every meeting, sometimes some people disagree. I got a couple, one question and then I have another issue. The first one, I think it's for Scott Peterson that works with the IT, if I'm correct on that. This happens to deal with a situation in my district. I have a constituent who informed me through a conversation that they had been on MnSure, although they now realize they're not eligible for it through a conversation in the county, but yet the county continues to allow them to be on MnSure, so they continue to use it for their health care needs. Now, after having that conversation, about 2 weeks later, I met with county commissioners and department heads in the county, and the head of our human services director, Gary, he's got a worse last name than I do to pronounce, so I'll leave it off. If you want it, I'll give it to you. During our conversation regarding human services in the county, he shared at the meeting that with current technology, he is not able to disenroll MnSure or medical assistance participants at the county level. So I asked him to repeat that, okay? I said, would you repeat that just so everybody heard it? So again, with current technology, he cannot disenroll somebody who's no longer eligible for Minnesota Care or medical assistance. Now, after spending, you know, over $300 million all over the place here, that was very disconcerting to me to hear that type of report from my county director of human services. So what is the problem there? Is this widespread? And according to him, I think he said 13 other counties were having similar problems.
Mr. Peters.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, I'll take the first part of the question and then allow DHS to respond as well. There continue to be defects in the system that are prioritized that we continue to work. I can't speak specifically to the disenrollment of the member, but assume that DHS would be able to have a response.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gruenhagen, it's Gary Spritzenatica, I think is probably who you're talking
about. You got it.
You
must have phonics in school.
there are some case situations, as I understand it, that counties can't close for. There are some that auto-close automatically when the system does something, identifies someone as no longer eligible at a renewal and so forth. There are others that counties can make the closure on. There are others they have to send to us, and we have to do the closing of the case. And so this may be one that's in that latter category. Without knowing the case situation, I can't say for sure. And I don't know the exact proportion around that, but I believe it's a relatively small number that they can't close at this point. And as Mr. Peterson said, we're working on identifying the defects and fixing them so that they can manage the cases properly.
Mr. Chair? Yeah, I guess, you know, as a representative, it's disconcerting to hear that type of information from your local county human services and the amount we've spent on technology on this MnSure. To still have these types of problems at the local level is quite unacceptable if it was a private company. I just add that. The other issue I would speak to, and I think that's for Commissioner Emily Piper, right? Okay, Emily, that's my wife's first name, so just for the record. Anyway, and she's always right, and I'm always wrong, by the way. So this might be the case this time.
It's on the record, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, the I've got a bone in contention with that 4% figure that you're sharing. Okay, not that it isn't accurate, but I was here when we initiated MnSure, and what was consistently shared at the committees, both by Chair Gottwalt at the time and Chair Abler, and it wasn't contested, is that we had about a 9% uninsured rate in the state of Minnesota. Okay, several years ago. The other thing that was shared, of that 9%, 6% were eligible for a public program but had not signed up. So we basically had a 3% uninsured problem before MNsure, okay, just for the record. So all we had to do was come up with a way to get those 6% to sign up for a public program, and our uninsured rate would have dropped to 3%, which would have been 1% lower than what the 4% is, okay? And that after spending over $300 million, if I add up all the figures right here. I think we could have bought those 3%, probably a Cadillac individual health insurance policy, with the $300 million for 10, 15, 20 years. So, you know, in retrospect, I don't see the 4% as a positive. I see it as a negative. And why should I change my mind about that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, I don't have the graphic with me, but the Department of Health, when they put together the information on the study about the 4% uninsured rate, the record low, what struck me about it was the number of newly covered lives, not only in public programs, but the growth in both the small group market and the individual market from where we were pre-ACA to today. And so, although the majority are public program enrollees, this study does show that there was growth in the rest of the marketplace as well, both on the private side and the public side. And I'm happy to get that information to you.
Ms. Chair?
Wrap up?
Yep. Hey, I appreciate that response, Commissioner Piper, but I would have added, we could have had a 3% uninsured rate, and we wouldn't have had skyrocketing deductibles, skyrocketing premiums, and since I've sold health insurance to 1978, this past year I had small business owners who could not qualify for a credit through MNsure or any other program cancel their health insurance and go without because they refused to pay those skyrocketing premiums for those huge deductibles. So you're getting more uninsured in some cases because people simply aren't going to pay this anymore, just for your information.
Thanks, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I want to go back to the point that you were making, Mr. Chair, the assertion you were making about the lack of transparency around the budget and asserting that that was an issue for the department and for MNsure. And I think it is really important, right, that we recognize that whatever is the fact about what happened in the conference committee last session is an issue of our making in the legislature. And I, you know, chased after this issue after the last hearing we had before session began. And I know you and I talked about this a little bit, too, and it sure seems to me that there were decisions made above my pay grade and above your pay grade about that conference report. And a lot of the work that happened was done in the really little hours of a morning on a weekend. And I don't think that we're ever going to reach a clear conclusion about what those words meant on the paper and what those numbers meant as they carried through that conference report, because some of the decisions were made privately, not publicly, and then that document came back to the conference committee for a vote. And I don't think that we should cast that problem as MNsure's problem and DHS's problem, but instead I think it is ours in the way that the end of the session was conducted. And a lack of clarity then about the decision making, and that's no good for any of us. It's no good for this committee. It's no good for how we're conveying information to the public. And I know that we disagree strongly about MNsure and its existence and its value. Certainly Representative Grunhagen and I disagree about that. You know, I'm very happy that we're at 4% uninsured, and in all my years of working in public policy and as a nurse, we've never had a rate that low of uninsured people, and I think it's good that people have coverage. But it doesn't mean that we have solved all our problems with MNsure, with the state's budget, with human services going forward. And so I hope that we don't continue to use that moment in time in that conference committee as weapon against the work going forward, both for us as a legislature and for the agency and for MNsure, because we do have real work to do. We don't necessarily agree on what that work looks like, but we share. I know you and I share the same aim to make sure that Minnesotans are getting affordable coverage. I know we share that aim, and I hope that that's where we put our time going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I appreciate that. And, you know, I've always said we're a written down law state, so we want to make sure that we keep them written down. And we do need to make sure that we have accountability and give direction. It is not fair to the agencies, the people who work for them, or the counties or their commissioners if we don't give them clear direction over their budget and oversight. And I think that as MNsure, I think that what we see here is a design flaw that was created years ago, and that we see that as a problem both in the governance structure of MNsure, the way they do their budgets, the way they spend money, and also the healthcare access fund and the ease at which both parties have used that money inappropriately over time. And I think we could all probably agree on that for moving forward. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a couple questions broaching a couple different topics, but just to the chair's point and other points that were made, as a member of the conference committee and, you know, to the others that were serving on it, they can certainly speak, but I would just to testify to the fact that there was never a conversation that I was a part of that agreed, that said, as long as it doesn't have MNsure anywhere tied to it, that's fine. That was never a conversation that was had, and it isn't fair for the public to think that. There was an agreement that we were not comfortable drawing down more federal funds for a system that was not working, and that would not garner votes. And so I just think that is an important point to be made. Many conversations were had around this, trying to understand the need and what exactly we were doing, but the way it was characterized is not how that happened. I appreciate Commissioner Piper Johnson, your comments on, you know, transparency with information, and since you have taken the job, you've responded to some letters that I've sent and outstanding questions that I've had just to try to get a better understanding, and I really appreciate that. I know that the funding mechanisms and the way the dollars flow is certainly complicated, and answers aren't always immediate, but can be found, and I appreciate the efforts that are given to that. I do have a couple of questions, just trying to understand how some of the dollars flow, and I recently was able to look at a document that I believe was received by Representative Zerwas via CD from the department when there was a data practices request. I know Chair Dean earlier referenced the Implementation Advanced Planning Document Update 12. I'm looking at that same document, but it's version 13 that was submitted to CMS. And as I was looking, there's some issues with licensing agreements and things of that nature, but one item in there, and just for your reference, because we may need to follow up later, but on page 35 of this document, this references a request to the federal government that would bring the expected cost of the program up to $460 million. And it talks about a state share increase of $10.5 million. And it's for systems modernization, as described in the previous 12 documents, and this is version 13, as I referenced. And I'm wondering, I can't find that state share of $10.5 million that this application to CMS references. So I'm wondering if you can point me to where that $10.5 million is in the accounting and budgeting of MNsure, the department. But that's just an example of I can't find that number. I can't figure out where that appropriation or where that state share is coming from.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mack, the APD 13 that you're looking at, the updated portion of it, is not directly related to the MET system or to MNsure. I mean, it builds on that whole series of planning documents, 1 through 12. But that is that change is really focused on the system modernization project that is DHS's project. There was an appropriation made. I think it ended up being about $16 million by the 2013 legislature for system modernization. This is an initiative that was really pushed by the counties, by AMC. to bring forward an initiative for us to work beyond just the health care frame, but into eligibility across other programs and then beyond into child support, modernizing our MMIS system, as well as work in the child welfare and other social services space. So this that APD 13 is really for the moving the work forward on the DHS side to get going on system modernization beyond just the work that's been done in health care.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the clarity, Mr. Johnson. I guess the one question I have is, here's where it gets a little confusing for members, right? Because the lines get blurred between DHS and MNSHR, and with the vast majority of MNSHR's clients being public programs, and therefore DHS gets billed for all this portion of MNSHR's operations and this, that, and the, some of the things that we're trying to tease out here. Here's one of those where that gets blurry in trying to understand that. In your clarity of kind of the build out, I'm very familiar with what counties are hoping to achieve down the road in terms of streamlined eligibility determinations for various programs. I guess my one concern, and I would wonder if the commissioner would share this or what the department's thoughts are, do you feel like with where the IT and the system is with MNSHR and just getting our eligibility determinations correct, which the auditor found was extremely troubling a couple months ago, with people being able to get on the right program with the right copays, billing issues, no Minnesota Care bills being sent. Do we really think we're ready to build on that very broken system? Do we think the department is ready to start building that thing out to SNAP and all these other things to the point that we're asking for $43 million? Well, I'm sorry, I won't try to tease this out and confuse people. I won't throw numbers to it. But to ask for more federal dollars, throw in more state money, do we feel confident that the department's ready to start building out on a system that isn't delivering on what it's supposed to be doing right now?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mack, I think, first of all, it's a very good question. And part of the reason that we're launching this APD 13 now, when the legislature passed this money in 2013, is because we've been in that same place that you're talking about, of trying to get the MET system to work for the MNSHR, for the DHS populations, and frankly spending a lot of our energy and attention on that, and also raising the same questions to ourselves of, are we ready to move on, are we ready to go? And we felt like, frankly, we just can't put off doing these next steps for any longer. Partly to your point, though, I would share that we're going to essentially not build onto, in the literal IT sense, the MET system, but actually set up a separate instance in which we're going to build the other DHS portions that we're talking about in this APD that is going to be for the SNAP and the MFIP and the other programs that we administer. Eventually, those should be integrated, but until the MET system stabilizes, we're not comfortable trying to build onto that frame at this point. So we're trying to find a path forward. We don't want to delay modernization. We need to make progress there as an agency, as a human services system. And so we decided we needed to get off the dime and start moving, even though we're still struggling with many issues in this current system.
And so, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Mr. Johnson, so are these kind of two totally different groups of teams working on this proposal in front of me, and who's working on the IT fixes for Minnesota Care, Medicaid, two totally different groups of people working on these issues?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mack, that's correct. There's actually resources that are in the document that you have that are allocated directly to the system modernization effort.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, just for clarification, so the money that's being appropriated to draw down the state share that's used to draw down federal funds for this purpose, that comes from where?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mack, that's from the appropriation that was made to the department in 2013 for system modernization. It's not an appropriation that's anywhere in your book. It's separate that we're using for the system modernization, separate from the METS and MNSHR appropriations.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And just to clarify, is that available to the public?
Mr. Chair, is what available?
The appropriation you just cited.
Mr. Chair, you would, I presume, although I would have to go back and look, you'd see it on a spreadsheet for the 2013 HHS bill, and you would see something in the HHS appropriations bill from 2013, probably a rider or something to that effect.
But not broken out so that a citizen at home couldn't come and look at that somebody decided it's going to be $23,475,695.10. They can't see that you decided that at a meeting somewhere.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what you're asking. If we wanted to augment that appropriation that was made from the legislature from other resources, or...
No, that's not what I'm asking. The would that have been a decision? You understand that you're using an appropriation from years ago that you're drawing from. Whether you draw a cup or a gallon, when you make that decision, is that decision transparent? And where would a citizen find out that you decided to do that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure the answer to that. I think other than looking into our SWIFT expenditures, which I believe are public information, but I'm not sure the public actually has direct access to them.
I don't believe they do.
For you to identify how much we're allocating where.
Thank you. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a quick question. I think it would probably be for Ms. O'Toole. And it's a question relating to the Executive Steering Committee and just how the decisions are made. I'm wondering, my understanding is the Executive Steering Committee, who sets a lot of the IT priorities, my understanding is those meetings right now are not public. However, the Executive Steering Committee reports to the Minsure Board. And so I'm wondering, to my knowledge, I thought that the Executive Steering Committee was subject to open meeting laws. Are they not? And if not, why not?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mack, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if, Chuck, you know the answer to that, but I can get back to you on that. I'm happy to.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Ms. O'Toole. And I guess it's just, you know, as we've talked, as a committee and the Minsure Oversight Committee, you know, as we continue to look at the gravity of the IT challenges, and I know that those priorities are set by the Executive Steering Committee, and I guess if there's not subject open meeting, if they're not subject to open meeting laws, I'd be interested to know the reasoning why, and then think that the legislature should strongly reconsider that, because I think the gravity of the situation really merits some public airing in terms of the way those priorities are being set and the decisions being made. And so I would be interested in the answer to that question and hope we could come by it quickly, because I think it's a worthy point of discussion to figure out what's going on.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for you regarding the call centers, maybe Ms. Piper or Toole. Now, I believe, and I think it's fair to say most folks on the committee and in the room believe that you don't wake up in the morning and think, how much worse can we make Minsure? What can we do to make it better? I'm sure that's on your top of the list, what we can do to solve the problems. No matter where I go, and I'm sure I'm not, it's an isolated incident, that people ask me, what's the deal with Minsure? I've had some problems. Just today I came from my hometown, and it was a funeral, and as I was walking out, another friend of mine said, hey, my sister, who has cancer, had a very tough time getting on Minsure. Very tough. And you can imagine when you're faced with such a tragedy in life, to have such a tragedy and not be able to get the help that she needed. Then I was at caucuses a couple weeks ago, and another lady broke down and crying because she had some sick kids, and she had troubles getting on Minsure. Great troubles. And then my insurance, a friend of mine in Watertown, my hometown, that I grew up in, called and said, a witness, he said that two of his clients, I won't say any names here, of course, two of his clients were retired, successfully retired, financially stable. Their health care went up, and they called their insurance agent, and he said, you know, you could try Minsure. Sure enough, they called Minsure. Effortlessly, they were able to apply and get online and get help. Now their health care is subsidized, and it went from a certain amount down to an affordable amount for these retired, financially well-retired folks. But yet the people who need it the most are not getting the help. And I'm sure there's a great concern here. I'm sure you don't wake up and think, how can we make things worse for people? But that's just, these are not two isolated incidences in Wright County and Carver County. I'm sure we hear of it all over. That just cannot be the case. We have to solve those problems. And, of course, I'm sure you're not looking forward to sitting in front of this committee time and time again as we, talk about issues and ask questions over and over again, but how can we solve the problems? What can you do? What can we do to solve those problems? Now, I'm going to turn that into a question based upon the call center. I see there's a close to an $8 million budget for the call center, but yet we are told, and I was told by my constituent in Delano, that when they called, they were put on hold. They called first thing in the morning, and it went to a voicemail, and when they did get through, it went over to someone at DHS. How can we fix that problem? I'm sure we're all sick and tired of listening about problem after problem and not being able to have a solution. So how can we be spending $8 million in a call center that doesn't work? What can be done to solve that? And please, you need to help some of our constituents who are suffering. And those who aren't eligible, those two retired folks who are retired in their 60s, living comfortably, do not need a subsidy from the state of Minnesota. Now, you know, forgive my passion here, but it's really, there's something broken, seriously broken, when you got retired folks getting subsidy and people who have sick kids or cancer or whatever cannot get the help. What can we do to help you, and what can you do to help us in helping our constituents?
Ms. O'Toole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. I will start, I'll answer what I think is your question. First of all, if you have constituents in your area that are still in need of help, we are happy to help, and you can connect with our government relations director, and we can get them the help they need immediately.
I will.
I think, you know, in terms of our call centers, we, DHS and Minsure have, we have separate call centers. The Minsure call center handles a lot of, I think the majority of calls coming in, especially during an open enrollment period. We had, during this last open enrollment period, 95% of our calls were answered within 5 minutes. We are always, but I will tell you this, you know, I do wake up in the morning thinking about this and thinking about how we can do better. And this is a natural time for us at the close of an open enrollment period to do some evaluating, and we are doing that. In terms of our call center, we are evaluating the use of our private vendor who helps us take off some of those initial calls for them, looking at expanding their responsibility so they can help reduce some of those wait times, although they are quite modest on average. But we're in a period of evaluation, and we do always look for ways to be more efficient. We work closely with the Department of Human Services in making sure our handoffs are smooth. We have work yet to do on that. We're not yet perfect.
Thank you, Ms. O'Toole. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions for Commissioner Piper. Looking at the spreadsheet of the business operation expenditures for Minsure, it says that DHS pays for 92% of several of the Minsure activities. Communications, marketing, the Navigator program, community outreach grants, the Assister Resource Center. Is that high level of cost allocation not on Minsure but back on DHS? Is that appropriate? I'm trying to figure out how we arrived at 8% of the cost of the Minsure call center is, or 8% of the cost for the Minsure, but 92% of the Minsure advertisement is paid for by DHS.
Ms. Piper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas. You know, I understand, and I wasn't at Human Services at the time, but I understand that that cost allocation methodology was set in 2014, and then DHS used it to inform their 2015 budget that they submitted to the legislature. But one thing that we're looking at now is we set our budget for Minsure and for DHS going forward into the next biennium, is we need to revisit our cost allocation and all of these to assure that we have the appropriate cost allocation for each one of the expenses on these lines to make sure that it's informed by our real experience that we've had in the last year and a half.
Mr. Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Piper, well, I have the estimates for 2017 And for communication and marketing, it still shows 8% being paid for by MNsure for MNsure marketing, and 92% being paid for by, you know, MA and by Minnesota Care, by DHS. So that's for 2017. So when do you think those reallocations, when will we have a look at that?
Commissioner Pike.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwa. So that budget page that you're looking at is a preliminary budget page, and the MNsure board will be brought a final budget proposal for the 2017 fiscal year, I think in June. And so I anticipate the work on the cost allocation methodology and the review of that to take place in the interim between when this was approved by the MNsure board and before the budget is approved.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwa.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I would be interested, as you tweak those allocations, if you could keep us up to date as that work is being done. Ms. O'Toole mentioned the fact that DHS operates a call center and MNsure operates a call center. Why then, for the call center expense allocation, why does DHS pay for 66% of the MNsure call center if you're both operating separate call centers?
Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas. That cost allocation was based on the number of people, I think, that they thought were going to come through the MNsure call center in addition to those that contact the DHS call center directly. DHS has their Minnesota call centers, but that a person calling a DHS Minnesota Care call center directly presumably knows that they're Minnesota Care eligible, whereas people coming into MNsure perhaps don't know whether or not they're eligible for public programs or subsidies. And so that cost allocation is really based on an estimate, I think, of the number of people that we anticipated being public program eligible, receiving the benefit of public programs, calling MNsure directly.
Representative Zerwa.
Mr. Chair, well, Commissioner, I guess that confuses me, because that means you assume that two-thirds of the people that call for MNsure actually meant to call for DHS. That, so for every three phone calls the call center takes in, two of them are actually they just called the wrong number. They called MNsure instead of DHS, or that two-thirds of the people calling in to the MNsure number actually should have called DHS. Because currently, DHS is paying for two-thirds of the MNsure call center. So DHS is paying for its own call center, and then it's paying for two-thirds of the MNsure call center. And that seems weird.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas. I think Allison O'Toole can speak to with some more specificity, or perhaps her staff can, around what kind of public program questions the MNsure call center actually answers, because they do answer and address a lot of the questions and concerns of public and private program enrollees as they call in that then never would have to come to our Minnesota Care call center. And so they do answer questions, and I think she can answer with some more specificity. Katie Burns.
Ms. O'Toole.
If that's okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, I'd ask Katie Burns to help assist in answering this.
Ms. Burns, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Katie Burns. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at MNsure. And Mr. Chair and Representative, we do field an extraordinary number of phone calls from folks who are both currently eligible for public programs, as well as people who call because they're interested in getting affordable health insurance coverage. They've heard about MNsure, and they just don't quite know how it works. So they pick up the phone, and they call a number that is very well advertised to find out kind of how they use the IT system and where they begin. So Some of the calls that we get from people who have already gone through the IT system, they might be calling because they are having issues in remembering their password and using the automated tools to reset passwords. I think a situation that we all can relate to for the myriad passwords that we need to remember for all the different types of commercial interactions that we might have. People are very familiar with the MNsure name, and so they will often call MNsure even if they are a public program enrollee already enrolled in coverage. And so it is, we've got about 92% of the enrollment in public programs. DHS is not paying 92% of the call center costs. No one thought that that was a reasonable cost allocation. Cost allocation metric, excuse me, but those are some of the nature of the calls that we field.
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, but they are spent, we are covering DHS 92% of the marketing and communication expenses DHS is currently paying for. So the super catchy commercial where you show people throwing money in a wood chipper, which is kind of how the state of Minnesota feels with MNsure, or the temporary tattoos you can get at the state fair. Taxpayers, DHS, we are paying for 92% of that, correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative, DHS is paying for roughly 92% of that allocation of the budget. I would also add, though, that's been appropriate because many of the dollars there have been heavily focused on getting uninsured Minnesotans into coverage, and the vast majority of uninsured Minnesotans have been eligible for public programs. So we have been reaching out and been very effective along with our navigator partners who have done terrific work in enrolling people who have frankly long been eligible for public programs and perhaps didn't realize that they were eligible for public programs, and now have those people successfully in coverage.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. And I'd just like to point out that, significant, as you point out, over 90% of the people within MNsure are within a public program. Where that divides, and we can decide whether that's a good public policy or that worked or it didn't work, but that's what it's been successful at doing, is moving people from one public program to another and signing people up for them. But when a person who's on Minnesota Care calls MNsure, from my experience in talking to constituents, it's because they have a bill from MNsure, and it says, make your check payable to MNsure. So that's why they call that number. That's what we've seen from our experience on the committee. So I think that's just another indication of where these lines are actually drawn in real life versus in an org chart, and where the accountability needs to lie. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the attention to a lot of important issues, but I think it's easy for us to kind of forget the history. And it's appropriate for new people, new times, to re-examine old decisions. We do that regularly, and I'm not being critical of that. But it does bring to mind how I was involved in some task force early in the beginning of this. It was assigned to look at the governance issues of MNsure. I don't know if we even had that name at that point. And I remember meeting in the basement of the Centennial Building with a lot of different stakeholders around the table. And overwhelmingly, even though we knew, I think many of us knew at that time, the majority of people would be on public programs, the pressure in the room from the private sector and from many in your party was really to say, we need to design this so it really works for the people looking for QHPs. And that it's attractive to them and it works for them. And I remember on the governance, there were some of us who actually were advocating for it to be a state agency with all the transparency and accountability and in the regular accounting system. And the pushback actually was from the private sector and from people who were representing your party, who said, no, this will not be able to be nimble enough. It will not be creative enough. If it is constrained within all that open bidding, we won't be able to negotiate cleverly enough with our vendors. And they prevailed in making it a separate agency, so we have a CEO instead of a commissioner. We have, and you know, so I think as Representative Murphy pointed out, we have to own some of these decisions. That doesn't mean we can't revisit them, but I really would like to tell people that honestly, the pressure in the early days of this was to instead have it be as free as it could be. There were people who were advocating that it be totally severed from state government, that the initial appointees would perpetuate it, set themselves on the board, that they would be really separated from state government. And I could bring up an example that happened with student loan refinancing from a decade more ago, that a group that went off on a totally different direction than the legislature intended and actually provided no student loan refinancing for people in the Minsky system. And so it was a real tussle, but the people who really wanted more flexibility won. And the other thing is that there was also a very strong demand, and it was reflected in the legislation, that in no way should the private sector have 1 cent subsidizing someone on Minnesota Care or MA, and that they did not want the private sector QHP enrollees to in any way be transferring money to help out our state budget when we'd hit tough times. And so I think we have to think about that, because we routinely go into tough times, it seems like more frequently than we go into good times. And that was really put in there as a protection to make sure that there were two separate bins and that they were each accountable for their expenses. And I still think that's probably a pretty fair way to deal with it, not transferring from one side to the other, but really playing it straight. And we know our public enrollees, they require more handholding. They're at the lowest income spread, because of their disabilities, they don't have the understanding of all the forms and all the terms of what is a copay and what's a deductible and what's a bronze versus a this, and they don't have very good technology skills either. So I'm not surprised. If you just know who we serve in public programs and who's eligible, that they overwhelmingly consume more than their share of attention. Should we get better at making those systems respond to people with limited reading ability, limited technology ability? Absolutely. But we really need to think about what is our goal, and I would hope we'd spend some time focusing on what is our goal for this system, and then do we need to make any adjustments to achieve that goal? But to me, a goal was to get more people covered by insurance so that we had less uncompensated care in our hospitals and in our clinics with our doctors, always feeling like they were too pressured to serve people who couldn't pay. And I think we've done marvelously on that. It's not perfect, but I think if we could refocus our discussion on what is the goal we want, how do we define fairness in allocation of expenses, and you know, I think we would have a more productive discussion. And so, but I did want people to share that bit of history, because it was a very different discussion at the time we formed this, and it was people from the private sector and from the majority party who were leading that charge, and some of the rest of us were more advocates of a state agency's type of approach.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. And I think that, you know, been traveling around and I've talked to a lot of folks around the state, and there is, if you talk to the public, you go home and you talk to the folks in Main Street, Minnesota, there is a disconnect. They would not understand what we're talking about in this room right now. And I kind of compare it to that, remember that dress, the picture of the dress that was going around, and half the people who looked at it said it's a blue dress, and then half the people who looked at it said it's a gold dress. And you're sitting next to a person, and you can't believe you're looking at the same thing, but for whatever reason, you see the opposite color. And it's been kind of like that with this thing, where you have a group of people that says, this is great, we're meeting our goals, this is, you know, T-bone champagne, and you know, this is awesome. And then you have another group of people standing back with kerosene and matches watching this thing burn. And if you talk to middle class Minnesotans in particular, they think we're crazy. Okay, They are trying to pay bills. They're trying to sign their kids up for insurance. They're trying to get their diabetes medicine over the weekend, and they can't because everything is screwed up, and they think we're all nuts, okay? So that's where we have to deal in moving forward. And I think particularly with this, as we move forward right now, I think, well, I don't want to look back on this committee hearing like I look back on the one from 2 or 3 years ago where we said, this thing is going south. What are we going to be doing to prevent this from happening? And then, you know, in subsequent sessions, what we're going to be doing is saying it's the other guy's fault. That's certainly not our job. Where I think that we're actually going to find the solutions is when I was up in Olivia, Minnesota, and we had a gentleman who sold insurance, and we had a person from the county, and they were both sitting there next to each other, and they realized that they had the same problems and that they were trying to do each other's job and that they are actually going to be dealing with the people who are struggling down the road in Minnesota. Those families are not going away in 5 years. They're going to be there. The doctors are still going to be there. The hospitals are still going to be there. We might all be gone. But those are the people who are paying the price today, and they're going to be solving the problems today and tomorrow. So I agree with you that we need to focus more on that than on, you know, who shot John last year or the year before. So appreciate that. Representative Law.
I would just say I think that there's no one who is totally in one camp. I think that we acknowledge there have been challenges in the rollout, quite honestly, the lead times that we got from the federal government were inadequate, and they were inadequate everywhere across the nation. And so have we had a rougher roll? Probably, because we are starting with trying to bring up a 1970s or 80s program system to the 21st century, and so we had a bigger chasm to leap and a lot more effort to move forward. So I will acknowledge there have been problems, but I will also acknowledge there have been successes, and I think on both sides we can see that. And I think our job is just to figure out how to increase the successes moving forward in partnership with the people who we've given a lot of responsibility to, not just money, but responsibility, who I think have worked really hard to try and leap over each hurdle as it comes up. Unfortunately, it seems like we keep finding new ones.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a few things I'd like to address. I'm going to start off with the first one. I believe it was the CEO that talked about the great successes around getting the uninsured coverage. And I didn't want to sit here and share anecdotal information or anything like that. I received a phone call from a woman who said that she was having a difficult time re-signing and reapplying for the uninsured coverage. I asked her if I could tag along. And she agreed. I said I would not reveal her name. We went to the county office, and the county folks were very helpful. We went online. She went online, and during that call, she was in tears. And we had heard, they had asked her, it was the county personnel that asked her, what type of computer. She was trying for months to get reapplied. They said, what kind of computer were you using? She said, a Mac, or my Apple computer. They said, that's why you couldn't log on. It's not Apple compatible. That was number one. Well, she said, why in the world didn't you tell me that? I could add coverage or applied months ago. I then, out of frustration, called Holly. Sorry to bring you into this, Holly. But I called Holly. She was able to give me another number, which you're right. We got some additional assistance, and we were able to, with some help, get her covered. She was having severe stomach pains. And so literally, we got in my vehicle, and we drove to the emergency room. I obviously did not go in with them, but she did call her children. They came to the hospital as well. I waited outside because I wanted to follow this thing through. She was then, and I heard this afterwards, she was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh.
She then, she was able to get referred to the U of M and get scheduled to go in. She did have the doctors take a look because she obviously wanted a second opinion whether or not this was cancer. They did that. They agreed to schedule surgery in January. She went back to have the surgery in January, and again, I wanted to follow this thing through. She went in January for the scheduled surgery. She walked in. They asked her a few questions, said, sorry, we can't do this. You don't have insurance. She was dropped come January. She went back online. She tried to apply. She thought she would was on it again, and this was February. She went back in February, going back in, and they said, sorry, you're still not covered. This is the horrible things that are taking place. And I witnessed this myself. I said, can I go with and just follow this along? And that way I'm not just sitting here, you know, spewing secondhand things. I experienced this by following along. These are the challenges that we're having with Minsure. And you know, secondly, if I can, two more things, Mr. Chairman. Two more things. You know, you talk about history. Just today, you're absolutely right. Sometimes we do forget about history, right? Just today, upstairs, I had a constituent. And I said, I have to get down to committee. I'm running late. It's HHS. We're talking about insurance, right? Minsure. He goes, hey, before you leave, he said, my insurance cost. 2008, my wife and I had coverage. We paid $384 a month. So it was $9,216 of out-of-pocket expense. In 2016, we're now paying $1,072 a month, $25,728 out-of-pocket expense with a $3,000 deductible, and we're told in 2017 it's going to rise to $31,248. Yeah. He said this is after the Affordable Care Act passed, right, and what we've done here in Minnesota. He said, my son, Rod, he said, picture this. He said, at his current salary, if he receives a $2,000 a year pay increase, $2,000 pay increase, his insurance premiums, because of that cutoff, will jump to $26,000 a year. He said, how does a young kid afford that?
They don't.
This is real. This is absolutely real. So we can, you know, we can share the good and whatever else, right? But these are the issues that we're dealing with. And this is the number one thing that I'm receiving calls about, is the insurance prices and coverage and stuff. Is, you know, everything else is important as well, right? Education, et cetera. But this is the number one issue. And you talk about the confusion, Mr. Chairman. I'm still confused. You know, are we talking about Minsure or are we talking about Mets? Did we scrap Minsure and now we got the Mets program or what? I think that we as a committee should make it a practice not to use the terminology of Mets. Because, again, it's confusing. This is Minsure that we're talking about. So it's confusing for me as a legislator as well. But these are real-life stories, real-life stories. And that's why we're so concerned, and that's why we're so frustrated. And it's not to take away from any of the good things that are happening. It is not. But this is real, and it's real people's lives, and we're the ones getting the calls in this. And so we're all in this together. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, I brought up last time where I'm upset, and I think we should go after the individuals that were designing this program, right? I did meet with the individual afterwards, and they can speak for themselves. And they said, Rod, you got the general contractor, you have subcontractors, and the subcontractors were working on four different things, four different cubes or whatever, and it's coming together, and it's not the general contractor, maybe it's some contractor. Well, quite frankly, I don't care who's at fault. But I think the state should figure out who is and go after the individual that is so that we can get reimbursed for some of these dollars. Because I asked the commissioner last time, well, the individual that was testifying last time, who is at fault? And had we hired, and my question was, a reputable company, and again, maybe I shouldn't have used those words, but had we hired somebody differently to put this thing in place, would we have these same issues? And their response was, probably not. So here we are, we're fighting amongst each other, people that I admire, we're fighting back and forth, you know? Are we going after the right people as far as this program? But this is real. It's absolutely real. We're the ones receiving the phone calls, and that's why we're so outraged. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. And we are out of time. It is 2:30. Really appreciate the commissioners coming in today. And we obviously will continue to be working on this. We also have been... we'll be talking about MA liens and that issue, which did not come up today. We have legislation that we will be looking at for that, as well as dealing with some of the technical issues, as well as the private health insurance, as well as public within Minsure. So stay tuned.
Do we leave these here?
Take them home with you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, the department, especially the commissioners. We really appreciate all your time. I know it's valuable. We do appreciate it on the committee. Thanks. We're adjourned.